All right, planning commission workshops. The purpose of planning commission workshops is to familiarize members with issues that will come before them, provide an opportunity for exchanging ideas regarding relevant topics, and to solicit agency or expert opinions to add to the body of knowledge before the commission considers changes to the comprehensive plan, policy, or text of the land development code. Workshops serve as a forum for training new members in procedural or administrative rules and for informing the commission of changes in state statute or case law that affect land use decisions. They provide an opportunity to determine the commission's schedule of upcoming hearings, meetings, or future workshops, and a chance to form subcommittees or focus groups on land use issues. Because workshops are intended to serve the entire membership of the planning commission, full attendance is anticipated, and when a quorum is present, meetings are subject to Oregon public meetings law. Notice is published on the county's website, on the county meetings bulletin board, and sent to local news media. Planning commission workshops are open for the public to attend, but are not an opportunity for public testimony. With that, we are considering home occupations tonight and the work of the subcommittee, of which Ward Ockenden has been chairman, I believe.
Yeah.
And I'm appreciative of that.
Okay.
Do a quick introduction unless Ward has to begin opening remarks.
Yeah.
No, I think I'll turn over to you.
Okay. Dave Wagner, planning director. And the introduction was done by Stan Wolf, chair of the planning commission. We had a home occupation subcommittee that was formed back in December. We met four times after the beginning of the year. And the subcommittee members included Ward Ockenden as chair of the subcommittee, Vivian Kirkpatrick, Nancy Hubbard, David Talley, and Nanette Chase. Dave Talley has joined us from the Small Business Development Center. He's in the audience tonight, as is Nanette, who's going to do a short presentation, which I think you'll find entertaining as well as informative. Nanette doubles when she's not on the subcommittee. She has a role as our county code administrator. So for the zoning code violations and such on properties, including complaints about home occupations, Nanette is usually their first contact. So anyway, I think we'll start off. She has a short PowerPoint presentation we're going to show, and then we'll go through the ordinance. We'll go through some of the things that brought us to where we're at with the recommended draft ordinance to the Planning Commission, and then we'll open it up for questions. Go ahead, Nanette. And this is primarily focused on the code enforcement aspects of...
I'm sorry that we're having trouble with our little laptop. Okay, the purpose of home occupation, the occupation code, is that to ensure that home occupations conducted on residentially developed properties are compatible with the neighborhood in which they are located and maintain the character and appearance of both the youth and the neighborhood. We're really focusing on making sure that there's no negative impacts to the neighborhood.
While creating economic development opportunities.
Absolutely. So permitted home occupations, the good. There are many home occupations that follow the standards set by Article 92. So most of them, as we know, are in compliance. Here's an excavation home occupation, and this is just driving by on the road. You see no sign. You wouldn't even know there's a business.
There's a quarry.
Pardon?
Is that a quarry?
No, it's an excavation business.
Oh, okay.
He probably has his office right on the property.
A couple of pieces of equipment, but yeah, they're screened.
Yeah.
A cabinet shop. When you drive by, you really can't tell that there's a business there. He's got his building back here in the back, behind the house, where he does his cabinet work. So there's really no signs of a business, no real impacts there. And this is a bakery, and that's their bakery. That's their little oven, their kitchen, and you would never know that either. So, very low impact.
Except for the smell.
Yeah. Making hungry all the time. And then we have dog grooming. very low impact. There's a little kennel area back in the back there.
How big are these properties, is that?
Oh, they range from, I don't know, 2 acres to...
Some of the ones that you've seen there. Can you give us a size there?
I think this one's about 5 acres. The bakery, oh my gosh, that's out in Williams, so I think that's probably over 10. Smaller property. And then we have the permitted home occupations that are not in compliance, but not so good. Bed and breakfast expansion has a lot of sight and sound and traffic impacts. They're coming through tourist season.
Is that the tree one that had some legal problems?
We have that is permitted as a bed and breakfast. We actually have 2 treehouse bed and breakfasts in the county with home occupation permits as a B&B. One of them has 3 units fully in compliance with their permits and all. One of them has 14. Five is the limit. 5 is the limit because of the residential building code. You can do a B&B because it's considered a residence, and if beyond 5 bedrooms, it's not considered a residence. With overnight guests.
And vehicle repair businesses don't always adhere to the standards and create significant sight and sound impacts. And these are typically the ones I get a lot of complaints on. Outside parking or storage is allowed for only 2 vehicles. And it might be hard for you to see in here, but there's more than 2 vehicles. And there's typically always a forget the rules or, you know.
But of course, if you don't have a home occupation, you can park a limited vehicle.
Yeah. As long as they're licensed.
That's not true. That isn't true.
No, as long as they're licensed.
Or is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
I can see the wheels are turning over here right now.
I didn't say that out loud.
Except for you.
Let me go back on that. If you just are a resident, if you just have a residence, you can park all the cars you want. But if you have a,
as long as they're currently licensed and they have registration tags.
If you have a home business, you can only park 2 cars.
Related to the business.
Related.
Yeah.
You can still park all the cars you want that are not related.
If the homeowner can have, sure. We can't limit his personal ones, but anything related to the business.
Right.
Wouldn't it be pretty hard to run an auto repair shop with only 2 cars? I mean, half the time you're waiting for parts. People drop the car off and you're working on another one. It's like, oh, can't bring any more cars here. Well, I'm done next Friday.
They can't when there is, so that's, you know.
Then is that 2 period inside the shop and outside, or just 2 that you can see outside the shop?
I believe it's just 1 of the 2.
Period. Regardless if you're in or out of the shop.
Okay, and so here's another one, and there's many vehicles here. We've got camper shells out in the front, decorated in the front property. So they tend to kind of, you know, expand. And here's another one on Williams Highway, and he's got parts and pieces, and there's the bodies of some old collectible
so
ones.
2 cars related to business, that's 2 cars that are owned by the person who works there, that are cars that are business cars? Or that's
no,
2
customers.
Cars? I see, 2 cars. So you can't have more than 2 customers pulling up and
storing them, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, what if they fenced that where you couldn't see it from off the property? Does that make any difference?
Well, that comes into
some of the numbers issues are in the draft. Why don't we wait till that discussion
okay.
And we'll talk about it.
I don't want to get into all the details,
right.
But he's going to go over that.
Okay.
And here's a special auto restoration, and I actually have an open violation. Lots of, he expanded without coming back to planning to get authorization for expanding. And so that created some problems, unpermitted structures, and then having employees that he wasn't authorized. So then there are the unpermitted. And I could just be here for hours on the unpermitted ones, but I just put a couple on here just so you can see.
The majority of the businesses in the rural area, isn't it?
Yes.
Unpermitted.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How many home occupations do we have? 78? 80?
Well, yeah, 78 to 80.
And what are the violations here? Just the fact that they have signs?
Yes, they have signs out on South Lower Upper River Road and down the side road, and then he also has them, you know, out in front of his business. So he's having He's selling
lawn.
Ornamental garden type thing.
No,
so
but
lawn statues.
Isn't that fine? Where on somebody else's property and they gave him permission to put it there? Would that be?
Well, it's the business itself that doesn't have a permit.
It's not a sign.
Yeah.
It's directing customers to the business.
Yeah.
So, and you see it quite often. This is this gentleman had an auto repair business going, but he's getting into compliance, and I'll be going to his property soon. And birdhouses, you know, they just kind of expand out into the road.
It's a monument, right?
That one was actually on Azalea.
Okay.
Yeah. This one actually is on Monument. She sells jewelry and, you know. Yeah, it impacts the traffic if people slow down because they want to, you know, see what's going on and turn in, you know. So they, and you see those all over the place.
And then oftentimes you, when you do get a complaint, you go out, you talk to the business owner. In terms of getting the permits or getting in compliance or working with you, what's the compliance rate? What's the degree of cooperation? I know it varies, but...
Yeah, it's
20-30% come in?
I would say,
They,
if it's just a home occupation, we can kind of get them in and to do that. But it's where we get to the bigger, you know, commercial or the, it has to go to the conditional use permit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more money and it's more paperwork, and they drag their feet more.
Right. Okay.
Can I ask a question about this? Now, this is like a well driller?
Actually, he provides water truck service for
wildlife
firefighters.
This looks to be like clearly a business, which is outside of the... Isn't that outside of the whole concept of home occupation?
Well, that's what we're gonna address that with you, too. There's some that we've looked at that it's just either they have to be dealt with in a conditional use
permit. So there are businesses that are operating in a residential zone, but they don't have a conditional use. That's what this kind of thing is. That's what we're looking
at.
That's correct.
Okay.
No, like this guy's a firefighter, and he only uses these trucks basically when the fire season is in. So that's like a story.
But he has a shop back here. He's got a water tank. And, you know, it wasn't such a big deal when he had one truck. But as I was working, he had other issues. So as I'm working on the other issues, I noticed the truck was getting more trucks. He can only drive one truck at a time.
I just kind of wanted to follow the difference between I don't know what innovation and business.
Okay. So anyway, kennels, you know, sights and sound impact, and then you probably see these scattered all over. They're permanent yard sale and retail sale.
Money,
you know,
my
drive. Not just a couple times during the summer. They leave it up, and and this converted shipping container, she had that at the wool store. So the list of unpermitted home occupations in Josephine County can go on into the sunset. Mm-hmm. And hopefully the revised home occupation code, along with public education, will encourage more home-based businesses while also bringing the existing unpermitted home occupations into compliance.
I have a question about building birdhouses or something. You know, do they really... I mean, even if they sell a couple of birdhouses once in a while, is that really a business? I mean, it seems to me like that's more like a hobby.
Well, you have to look at the IRS code,
and
that'll tell you exactly what a business is.
Well, the IRS says that, you know, if you don't make a profit 3 out of 5 years, then you're a hobby. Once you're a hobby, I assume that you still have to report any income you make. You just can't deduct your expenses. So there's a little unclarity there.
You always declare.
That would, as you go through that, we'll clarify.
They can double back on you.
Yeah, because somebody's building birdhouses, you know, and they kind of wishful thinking, I hope I might sell one of these days and kind of cover some of my expenses. And maybe they do occasionally sell one. I have a hard time saying, yeah, we've got to charge that guy to have.
And I don't think that's where we're heading with this at all.
Yeah.
you know, somebody that does something as a hobby, is retired. You know, I had a lot of woodworking equipment. I thought I was going to retire and use this. I still got things in shipping crates, you know, that I never got to. But that's, you know, that's somebody who comes up here retired, does a little bit of that. I don't think we're focusing on that individual.
Well, I was just asking because I saw that, you know, birdhouses, and I really thought, birdhouses, really?
Well, there's, and I think part of the reason that I was, we've got every kind of possible business and, you know, hobby turning into business, business turning into hobby.
Yeah, and who's to say if it's a business or a hobby, and then at some point, well, they start having
that. Do you make your living? Do you make your living? Yeah, there's going to have to be a test.
Right, but I don't think anyone's going to be
another question for the minister. In your final slide, you said you hope that the new ordinance we're considering will expand home occupations and at the same time bring those that are out in compliance into compliance. How would that last? How would this do that? How would it bring it? How would
I'd like to answer that, but I think once Dave goes through this proposal that has been brought up, will be answered.
Just one question. Is medical marijuana business considered a home business or
nonprofit?
Nonprofit. One thing that I can say about, since I do work the counter and I do answer planning questions often, when you have someone calling about a home occupation and we would have to let them know what the application process was and the fees,
right.
You know, you're not ever going to see them again the way it currently stands, because you're looking at a $2,000 fee for the full application. If it does any type of modification at all, then it goes into a site plan review also, and that's an additional $2,000.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So it's very prohibitive.
Right.
So we've really tried to be a lot more business friendly with the new fee structure.
Gotcha.
We'll go through just real quick. If you want to turn to Article 92, Home Occupations, the draft ordinance. And we've come up with some general, I'll go through this fairly quickly so we have more time for questions later. And in introduction, I guess, one thing that the subcommittee struggled with, and I like the way they approached it, and Valerie was very good, I think, at bringing us through that process, was to look at potential impacts of businesses, was one of the exercises we looked at, and what potential impacts are we comfortable with, how do those fit into natural tiered applications. Josephine County's kind of unique when it comes to home occupations. We're one size fits all, essentially. You're a home occupation, then you're a conditional use. I guess we've got two sizes. But at a $2,000 fee, that's a pretty hefty fee for building birdhouses. So we looked at potential impacts. We looked at structuring this ordinance so it would have different levels and then fees to match. So as you get more intensive, your level of review goes up, the level of fee goes up, the level of public knowledge and potential for mitigation of impacts, and having to put money into that, such as screening and mitigation, walls, landscaping, that sort of thing, went up as your potential for impacts to your neighbors went up. This is all about thresholds. I mean, we have different thresholds we've identified, and I think that there's some room for discussion with the Planning Commission, certainly, and when we hear from the public and public testimony on what those thresholds ought to be. One of the things that we decided right off the bat was to have an exemption. So I think the building birdhouses, frankly, if you're a photographer and you're working in your house and you go out in the field someplace and take photographs and put them on the internet and do sales that way, you're exempt. I mean, we have quite a few exemptions, and those are in after the general definition. So on the first page of the draft, you have some definitions. And there's the first introduction of type 1, 2, and 3. Before that, we'll get into the different levels. On page 2, list the exempt home occupations. And again, rather than trying to specifically identify types of businesses, we just identified them by their potential impact and their size. Now, that's a lot easier to do. You'll notice that you have noticed, I'm sure, elsewhere on the code, we have an extensive list of things by name. Well, the problem I've always had as a land use planner is, what if you get a new use and it doesn't have a name, you're trying to call it something else? It's much easier to describe it by number of trips, by size, by employees, by all the kinds of threshold decisions that we made in this code. And that's what you see in the level 1, 2, and 3 tiers. But we do have some exempts. Principal occupants of the residential property undertake them. No exterior signs, no customers come to the property, delivers by postal package service, UPS and FedEx, one business vehicle on site. And a question that comes up a lot, can I paint a sign on the side of my vehicle? Fine by me. I don't call it a sign. It's parked out in the road. Frankly, I'm not going to argue about it.
If it's your vehicle for business use, business vehicle.
Yeah. People use them as signs because they're parked in a prominent place, but frankly, we're not going to get into that. It's exempt. We've got type 1, up to 2 non-resident on-site employees and volunteers. We've got non-illuminated exterior signs, 6 square feet, 2-by-3-foot sign. 2 business vehicles permitted on site, which is compliant with the current code for home occupations. And we try to limit that, no large construction equipment or commercial vehicles. And remember, when you're going through this, you have to look at the next level. You might say, well, what about those people that are contractors? They're just not a type 1. They're going to be a type 2 or a type 3, depending upon how many vehicles and employees they have. So some of the contractor who's at home, doesn't have a sign, maybe has one on his truck, but he just uses it as a home office, stores a few materials in his garage, but goes off-site to do all his work, he's going to be exempt. But if he's got 2 or 3 employees coming to the site, and he's got a van, and they've got, you know, some other contractor vehicles, then maybe he starts getting into those upper types. Got type 2 home occupations. There's actually some wordsmithing we'll need to do there. We accidentally combined a couple of steps. Midway through 5 is number 6, and then they renumber after that. And with these descriptions of home occupations, we also had to come up with some definitions. Incidental detail sales. I think we all know what that is. It's basically someone who cuts your hair that sells a bottle of shampoo on the side. But we wanted to make sure that that was included because they're an essential part of many home occupations, especially the service ones. Accountants sell copies of TurboTax, that sort of thing. So there are some retail sales that occur there. In type 3 home occupations, any proposed business, excluding those items listed in 9208A, which is the prohibited uses, and exceeding the standards of type 1 or type 2, get reviewed as a conditional use, or must be conducted use in a commercial industrial zone. And that's part of the message with this ordinance. Home occupations are essentially a transition zone. They're a way to run your business, see if it's going to get off the ground, make minimal investments without having to sign up for a 3-year lease in a commercial industrial property, without making large investments in infrastructure and vehicles and employees and taxes and all the stuff that goes into that. See if it's going to fly for a couple of years. Maybe you might even move through a couple of the types as a home before you eventually move to a commercial industrial property. They're also for businesses, and we had one last season. Their building here in town burned down. And they had contracts to fulfill. And the only way we could see to keep that business alive and move them off the property while they were cleaning up that site was to maybe open up a home occupation for them, allow the business to continue at a home site, and then until they could move back into the commercial facility.
What was the business
again? It was Mountain Alerts. They ended up going elsewhere. We didn't actually do it, but that was the process that we identified for them. So I think businesses on their way up and businesses maybe on their way down, home occupation seems like a reasonable way to accommodate them.
Back on, did we touch on prohibited uses yet?
We're not there yet, but go ahead.
Number five, appliance repair. I think that should be in there.
What's that, Warren?
I'm going to take forward on pretty uses.
Oh. Which one should be there, number five?
Yeah. I think that's something that could be allowed in a, allowed in a type two, probably.
The biggest problem.
Well, it actually did come up as a suggestion from subcommittee members, even. I think it has to do with what happens to those broken down washing machines and dryers.
Well, and that you need to, when we do this, we should clarify that in there. I mean, it, you're not allowed to have it sitting outside as a wrecking yard. Yes, but yet.
No outside storage.
A repair business should be allowed, I think, in a type 2 atmosphere, as long as there's not more than two stored outside or three or something.
I agree with that.
Yeah, every appliance repair shop I've seen,
yeah.
It has 20 or 30 of these because they gather them and then they take them and recycle them.
But again, focusing on the impacts,
yeah.
If we know what those likely impacts are, we can build that mitigation into the permits.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me a lot of these impacts could be ameliorated by having fencing. I'll say you got 100 washers out there, nobody can see it except you. So you get your 100, you get a semi in there and you haul them off. Who cares?
Well, that gets the process of bringing heavy equipment in to do that sort of thing.
Whatever year.
Yeah.
I guess if there's screen, there's provisions in here for screening too. Mm-hmm. So I mean, everyone wants to look at 100 little brushes sitting around, but if they're screened or fenced, I guess who cares?
Let the blackberries grow over them.
can I say something about that? I mean, you guys had an incident a couple 3 years ago with the gentleman out in Selma that was doing computer repair and all the computers are being on the property. Nobody cared when we saw it, but what is it doing to the property? And basically, mm-hmm. Well, down there was an environmental issue because of what's going on there. So, yeah, about a sight out of mind? No.
Not exactly.
That's a good point. Yeah. Some things aren't an environmental issue, so we can
address the refrigerators, what's the chances of a refrigerant being, you know, I mean, these are the things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it can happen if you've got five there continuously, too, so
right.
It's an issue
right.
Either way. But, yeah, I understand.
So I think what Ward's saying is, you know, if you're going to do something and make compliance on this, there has to be a limit of what the compliance is. Yeah,
right.
You may be using it, Don, it's correct, you know, until they make one load, they may be using all those for parts, too.
Right.
So, you know, what is that, what's that rule? So there's a gray area, you know. You don't want to put the guy out of business because he needs that stuff at the same time.
Right.
You know.
But if you've got to have 100 appliances in your yard, maybe that's a conditional user.
Yeah. Again, what type, what level are you? And as the level goes up, the degree of mitigation is going to go up because the degree of potential impacts goes up as well. And I think we've done a pretty good job at meshing most of that together. The ordinance may need some fine-tuning, and let's face it, whatever we throw out to the public and do in a public hearing, as you know, is going to get some comments, and we'll see some changes from whatever draft we put in front of you.
Well, I'd like on this, I see a guy that has a little ad on Craigslist as I repair appliances, and he gets a phone call, he goes out, repairs an appliance, and every now and then he brings one back to his house and works on it and brings it, you know.
Right.
I'm not talking about the guy that's, you know, stockpiling 100 washers or dryers. That's
right.
The story. I mean,
yeah,
and so how do we define that?
Yeah, and I could buy into that. That's a fair deal there. It's just when this gets out of control. We got one there in Kirby, and I mean, he has truckloads of this stuff, and they get some company that comes over and they with some pretty heavy equipment, and they load all that up, and that's what we don't want to get into in a residential area, especially if somebody's come up here to retire, and what do? They got this nest next to their home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've been dealing out on Chapman Creek. You're undoubtedly familiar with Chapman Creek, aren't you?
Well, that's right. I've got a guy that does that up on one of my rentals, and he has probably a fourth of an acre piled 20 feet high with junk and garbage, and it was drawing rats. And I tried to get enforcement from the county before your time in it. And from the city, they said, no, it's UTV, go that way. And finally, he died, and I was getting cleaned up. You got to be able to enforce it, too.
Go back to your house.
We're on our take care.
No, yeah, but he wouldn't drink it before he does.
Right.
We have a house and the next door was actually kind of a junkyard. And all these old junk cars in various stages of, and you know, we scratched that out.
Want to touch on an issue that got a fair degree of discussion from the subcommittee. Short-term sales from a residence.
shall not be deemed to fall under the regulations for home occupation or allowed outright. Such sales shall not exceed 4 days in duration and occur more than 10 times in a given calendar year. Yard sales. Exactly.
We've been going around since 1975 at least.
Well, buck stops here.
This is something that we've had a lot of discussion.
I can see everyone nodding their head, yes. We finally nailed it down. I think there was a little horse trading back and forth on how many days and how many events per year. We came with, shall not exceed 4 days more than 10 times in a given calendar year. I'm sure we'll get some discussion on that from the public, but that was one of the hot topics among the subcommittee. I'm sure it will be once we hear from public testimony.
I found yard sales could be more disturbing to people than anything. There's all sorts of individuals coming up to those.
So we've got some standards for renewal and revocation. One of the things that's a little different than what we do now is that we're proposing to make the home occupation valid for a 2-year period. Right now they're only valid for 1 year and you have to renew it every year. What we'll probably end up doing in the administration of this ordinance and in our office is put together a packet like we do for medical hardships right now. We discovered that with medical hardships, people were coming in, they were under duress, they're having to make some decisions fairly quickly about their elderly parent or a disabled person. And a lot of what we told them just went in one ear and out the other. So right now what we've put together is a small, it's kind of a peachy folder. It's got their application in it. It's got pertinent information. We even put a sticker on the outside and we write down what their renewal date is. They can keep it in their filing cabinet at home. It's identified as their medical hardship file and they can keep all their documents in it. So we've tried to make it a little easier for people to remain organized, know what the rules are and stay in compliance with them. And I envision doing probably a similar thing with home occupations.
Why do they need to get a renewal at all? Why not let it go indefinitely unless they get complaints? It's just going to cost them more money every 2 years, right?
We're not talking about much money. And it's an opportunity to take a look at the type for them to check in and say, okay, you're still a type 1, you're still a type 2, or is it time to move up, or is it time to go to a commercial industrial facility? Rather than doing it through our compliance officer.
Well, much money depends on, how much money someone has. How much is much money? But they don't need much.
Maybe like that, $35?
$125 for home occupations.
Okay, every 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, I thought it was $300.
No, $125.
$125.
Every 2 years. Yeah. We'll talk about fees here in a moment. Now, fees can change. We're coming up with a new fee structure for home occupations, and it's a whole lot less than 2,000 for most of them. So whatever number we come up with, that's what we've come up with. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the methodology for that.
But what I don't see in here yet is something about penalties. You can reduce your you can have your permit revoked.
Right.
But what about beyond that? I mean, what if somebody is simply not conforming to the rules.
Then we have we bring in that. There's a $500 violation surcharge for people that are not in compliance with the code. And
well, that's in a different ordinance.
Yeah. Okay. If the county doesn't get satisfaction with that, then they can actually take them to court.
Put a lien on the property?
I don't know if they're going to court. I just have to talk to the legal department on that one.
Or hasn't that cleaned up or something?
Let's not bring you on.
Okay. We didn't go that far. Yeah. We only had 4 meetings. So anyway, Valerie's going to talk a little bit about bed and breakfast. Now, the subcommittee didn't spend a lot of time with bed and breakfast. I think we chatted about it in context of the tree houses, but we focused mostly on home businesses other than B&Bs. But we're looking at the code. We've got some B&Bs out there in the county, and we also need to fit them into this new typing system because B&Bs currently are in Article 92. So we're going to talk about that just a bit.
Mostly there wasn't a change in the way that it's reviewed because it will still go through the CUP. it won't have the separate charge for site plan review. So it'll be the $2,000. And there is a possibility of a hearing when you're going through a CUP review process. There's not huge changes from the original ordinance. There used to be some rather...
Does everybody know what a CUP is?
Conditional use permit, sorry. The biggest change is the way that it was structured previously so that you could only have so many bedrooms per square foot of residence. And it was rather restrictive, and it kind of was messy and a little overbearing. You had to have 700 square feet to have more than two bedrooms, I believe, was the original code. So basically, we just capped it off at where it becomes a non-residential structure according to the building code. So they can have a maximum of 10 individual guests and 5 bedrooms. And in a residential setting, I think that's pretty adequate for trying to mitigate for the impacts.
And that's what the building code focuses on. That's what the current code focuses on.
And that's in addition to the bedroom.
Yes, definitely.
Yep.
And then one car per bedroom.
Right. Yes. Parking is always a big deal when it comes to home occupation because you don't want to use the right-of-way. You want everything to be on-site. We give them the option of either having these the bedrooms can either be in the residence or they can be separate living quarters. So there's that option also. They don't all have to be within the home. There you go. Like any other home occupation, the owner does need to be present on the property. Maintaining the residential character and just compatible with the neighborhood, not creating a lot of traffic through the neighborhood. Things that you need to consider are, you know, are they off of an easement? Are they off of a forest road? Is it a private road? That's for any type of home occupation. We have allowed for illumination of the sign just because people are showing up in the evenings. And they do have to meet any other applicable county and state water, sewage, and licensing requirements. So it's pretty, we basically just made it easier, shorter, less of a hassle to figure out math-wise.
So this was used to be a conditional use permit. You've kind of downgraded it to a Type 3 home occupation permit now, which seems good to me.
A Type 3 is a conditional use permit.
Oh, it is a conditional. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I guess I read that somewhere.
Which is consistent. So B&Bs are still consistent. It's just that we're not throwing in that extra fee of another $2,000 for the site plan review on top of it.
Okay.
Why don't we
talk about
fees real quick. I know it's a big issue, and I'll get in that, and we'll have a few minutes for questions. I want to try to break about 10 minutes before the hearing so we can move the tables and all that. We looked at it, and we kind of made it simple in a way. We were talking about the number of digits in the fees. Exempt is a 2-digit fee. A type 1 is a 3-digit fee. A type 2 is maybe a little more, 3-digit fee. And a type 3 is a 4-digit fee. That's where we started, and then we started playing with the numbers. What we came up with, and we also looked at the amount of staff time to review them. This planning department has received a directive from the board a while back to try to pay for our services as much as we can through development fees. But we also want to encourage home businesses, so we cut it to the bone. I think part of what we can do is scale back some of, you know, what's involved in the review as well, streamline it as best we can. The exempt review is over the counter within a day or two. There's no renewal. The time is about an hour worth of staff time. We log it in. We note that there is a home occupation on the property, and that comes in handy because if a business or a neighbor wants to come and complain about them, or oftentimes people understand there's a business on property, and that becomes a way to resolve another gripe, basically. But we've got them registered, they're exempt, we just say, look. So that's some of these fees, frankly, what we're building into this are the questions of people who have yet to apply, because that's a lot of the staff time. And anytime we pass a new ordinance, we're going to get plenty of that. Type 1 is a standards-only review with a development permit. Right now, development permits are $275, and you pay a pre-application fee on top of that. So what we're going to do is make that the same as the
pre-op fee, build the development permit fee into it. So essentially it's one fee, not two. And proposal for a technical review, the site plan with a development permit. Staff is doing a site visit. We're talking a little more mitigation with the Type 2 permit. We have a written decision with specific conditions. There's the biannual renewal. Time approximately 8 to 10 hours.
I think biannual means twice a year. I don't think you mean twice a year, right?
Biannual. I mean every 2 years.
Okay.
Every 2 years.
Yeah, every 2 years.
No way to make it clear.
Semi-annual is every 6 months.
Biannual means two.
Biannual means 6 months, but I just looked it up.
Semi-annual
does also. Biannual means two.
I always interpret that.
That's why I go to your computer.
Thank you, Ward. 2 year renewal period.
Now, does it cost the same, or is it a lower fee to renew?
Yeah, it's just $125 a renewal fee. Essentially, $75
for any of these. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Any of these categories?
Well, except for the exempt.
Folks, we're making it up as we go along here. If we got suggestions, we'll take them.
Just a proposal of $125 for everything except the exempt.
Right. Right. And then conditional use permit, current fee of $2,000 with a pre-app and development permit. So. For the Type 3 conditional use permit, you're into it $2,600.
Part of the issue is the exempt. People who are in their vacuum, in their spare bedroom to do something online and hope that they might make a couple bucks off of it. That puts them to pay $50 for the privilege of doing that in their own. So it seems that an exempt ought to be an exempt. That these are the standards. If this is all you're doing and you don't have any signs and nobody has any way to really know that you're doing a business there, then why should you have to pay anybody $50 to use your own hobby and maybe make a few bucks off of it? Recoup some of your cost. I just think the exempt ought to be exempt and let's see it all.
That too. Besides which, we've never helped there doing it anyway.
That's right. There's no, because the very definition of exempt means that you wouldn't even know if they're doing it.
Typically, no customers come to the property.
Yeah.
So
what
do you have to worry about?
What
does
it go on?
What do you have to worry about? There shouldn't be a $50 fee for that. And if a neighbor does complain, well, that means that they're doing something beyond what it says in the exempt.
If I'll interject here, what we run into all the time with people coming in trying to start a business or whatnot, understanding the city codes and permits, what the definition of a business is. Definition of business for all the cities in Southern Oregon, Grants Pass, Metro, and all those, is if you are in the city limits and or are soliciting or marketing your business within the city limits, you have to have a city license. So that says I could be in the county and have my business in the county, but if I step foot in the city and solicit or market my business, I have to have a city license, even though my business may be in the county.
So
what we're trying to say is that these people are actually working out of their home, they are producing a product or service, and they are being, and they are soliciting customers. Whether it be the internet, they don't have to walk in the house, they'd be soliciting customers. By advertising in the Daily Courier, by advertising in the Think Preview, then they are in fact doing a business and soliciting revenue, then they should fall in the same categories as all the other places. If you say you live in the Grand Fest, yes, you have to pay $50 to have a same license.
But if you took this to the extreme, you could advertise online and say, okay, I got to buy a business permit in every city in the country or the world.
But see, that's the area the U.S. government is trying to get into right now, is to charge people to do that on the internet. So where do you draw the line?
Right. Well, see, I
have a business license for the city of Medford. I got two or three customers over there I see once or twice a week. But because I go over there and it's in the phone book and soliciting, I'm in business.
Now, let's say I live out in the county and I make birdhouses. That's my hobby. I decided, my grandpa made birdhouses, he taught me to make birdhouses, I make birdhouses. And then I think, they have these internet sites where you can sell arts and crafts and stuff. And what if I post up on the internet site and see if anybody might want to buy a birdhouse? Now, I've never made money off of a birdhouse. It's all wishful thinking, but because I've advertised on the internet, do I then have to pay $50 to every city in the state where anybody might go on the internet?
It's a gray area.
That's why I think that those things should be exempt, because it is a gray area and there's no way to enforce it. Any regulation that is impossible to enforce it's not worth having because it's just headache.
If you can't enforce it, don't have it.
If you can't enforce it, don't have it. Exactly.
Okay, with that, let's adjourn the meeting for tonight. And I don't know, do we want to
take this guidance to...
I want to know, do you want us to come back with another workshop? Do you want us to just come back to you with a hearing, and you think we're good enough to go?
Well, I've got questions still. Obviously, I don't have time to answer them right now.
Okay.
I can send them out to you.
What's everyone's feeling here?
I'm okay with going to hearing as long as we eliminate the fee for exempt businesses. Then I'm okay with going to hearing.
Yeah. I could go to hearing if I could see the letters that are letters of concern.
Well, I've got issues like Valerie mentioned access. I didn't see anything that reading through this proposal about easements versus on the right of way versus Forest Service. I didn't see anything about water. Like, are they limited to 5,000 gallons a day if they're doing a bed and breakfast? Because I think that's the limit if it's commercial normally. And bed and breakfast would be a huge water use.
Oh, that's interesting.
We didn't talk about it.
And once you go into a Type 3, and we're also reviewing against site plan review standards, those issues come into play. But at the low, but at the lesser impact levels, they aren't as big a concern. The access would be a concern only if they did not meet the definition of 11.030.
Okay, as far as letters are concerned, we have two letters so far on this.
Those aren't regarding home occupation. Those are regarding dwellings in commercial zoning.
Oh,
so it's a different issue, different ordinance.
But do we have any letters on this topic yet?
No.
Okay. So do we want to bring it back?
Oh, we did get a letter on this topic from two people.
No, that was the ones we sent you.
I just read them again. They're talking about they want to be able to do home occupations in the country, so they can their own property that I spoke
to. No, they want to live in commercial businesses in the commercial zone.
So
it's a little different.
It's related to your edges.
So what do you say we bring this back one more time for a workshop, one more time, see it in a little more refined form, see the letters that we might have done by then. And then
okay.
Take a hearing after
that. So are there other letters beyond the ones that we
know? Is everybody good with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, does a good job.
It was almost perfect.
I thought
they did a great job. Yeah. Really, don't butter them up too much.
Yeah. Good luck.
All right, go home.